Newsweekly is an ad-free listener-supported podcast made possible by listeners like you. Just go to patreon.com/sammyshah to support the podcast. This week, I published a list of comedians you should watch at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival. A lot of the same comics will also do shows in Sydney, Brisbane, Perth, and other parts of the country in the coming months. So if you're not sure who to see, let my Patreon post guide you. You can also find short stories, updates on my live shows, book reviews, the odd recipe, and much, much more. All that over at patreon.com/sammyshah. That's S-A-M-I-S-H-A-H. Top stories of the week. Woke bridge collapses. Also, ISIS needs a better escape plan. And can't get Splendor out of my head. All that and more on Newsweekly. Hello and welcome to Newsweekly, where we punch the news in the headlines weekly. I'm shipping up to Baltimore news now.
I need one of you guys on the south side, one of you guys on the north side, hold all traffic on the Key Bridge. There's a ship approaching that just lost their steering.
It began innocuously enough. A dispatch call in the middle of the night in Baltimore. But Baltimore authorities should have known this is how all disaster movies start. Oh, look at all the rats running in one direction. I wonder why. And then 2 minutes later, Godzilla and a horde of zombies is bearing down on you.
313 dispatch. The whole bridge just fell down. Everybody. The whole bridge just collapsed.
And like that, a container ship built to carry 10,000 containers rammed into Baltimore's giant Francis Scott Key Bridge, which promptly and dramatically collapsed, killing 6 construction workers and the credibility of right-wing commentators everywhere.
We have to get to the bottom of this. A cargo ship hasn't taken out a bridge in decades. And a ship, as far as we can tell, has never sustained a power failure before a bridge knockdown. We need answers. Someone has to pay.
There is. Let me also get your take on what's going on in terms of world affairs. The White House has issued a statement on this saying that there's no indication of a nefarious intent in the collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge. The ship involved in the collapse of the bridge is 948 feet long, called the Dolly, a Singaporean flagged container. But of course, you've been talking a lot about the potential for wrongdoing or potential for foul play given the wide open border. That is why you have been so adamant. Why has the Republicans had such a hard time securing this border? The president says he's not going to take his executive action. You know that.
Yes, the border with Mexico, which is a short 1,700 kilometers away from Baltimore. Unless she's talking about the Canadian border, which is just 500 kilometers away. And look, I never trusted those maple-drinking fucks either. So, nefarious power outages, Mexicans, who else could be blamed for a ship suffering a technical fault? Could it be COVID?
But what kind of questions do you want to see answered, Matt?
Well, you know, as I said, you look at our critical infrastructure, and I'm one of these people that believes we've never fully come out of all the lockdowns and the
right
and the COVID issues. Look, whether you look at our air traffic controllers, where we have critical mission problems with filling slots. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm no expert on what's going on the seas, but all I would say is that if you talk to employers in America, they'll tell you that filling slots with employees who aren't drug-addled is a very huge problem.
Drug-addled COVID lockdown workers crashed the ship. Who else? Who else can be held responsible for this? What about, I don't know, trans black people?
Hiring necessarily the best people. We used to say we're going to hire the best people regardless of their color, their skin, their sexual orientation. Now we're saying, well, we may hire the best people, but more importantly, is their ideology or their ethnicity or their gender or their sexual orientation.
And it should be a psych evaluation test. What do you see when you look at this footage of a ship crashing into a bridge? Do you see mummy and daddy fighting, or is it minorities doing drugs in your cubicle? I see a ship representing the ever-increasing demands of modern trade losing power like the challenges faced by the supply chain wrought by excesses of capitalism, crashing into a bridge representing a decline in prioritizing infrastructure maintenance over culture wars and politics. And the bridge being named after Francis Scott Key, the man who wrote the lyrics of the Star Spangled Banner, now lying destroyed in an election year, which more than ever before could be the beginning of the end of the American Republic, is the kind of omen that in the old days would have had you sacrificing a black bull and a two-headed goat along with a at least a couple of virgins to ward off the symbolism. But no one asked me. Who they should have asked is David Simon, famous Baltimore resident and creator of The Wire, one of the greatest TV shows of all time. After a Florida congressman blamed the ship crash on diversity and inclusion practices by tweeting, DEI did this, Simon tweeted back, your mother did you, but after a hard life of service on a truck stop lot, can we really hold her loosened, battered womb responsible for dropping you headfirst on the Winnebago floor and burdening our society with yet another empty racist demagogue thereafter? We cannot. And it's not just the US right-wing fuckheads who took it upon themselves to impose hysteria, because wherever there is America, there are Australians trailing behind it like an embarrassing fart.
I've got no information that this might be the case, but you'd have to ask the question, wouldn't you? Could there possibility be that that ship had been somehow hijacked by someone and deliberately driven into that pylon?
Steve Price there reacting to exclusive footage of the bridge collapse aired by crack investigative journalist Sherry Markson.
Now, what you're watching now, this vision has just come into our newsroom, and you can actually see this is new information. We didn't realize this before. There was an explosion on impact. There was fire. This is unbelievable footage.
Unbelievable was right, because the footage was taken from a Ukrainian attack on a Crimean bridge in 2022. Shari Markson did correct the error while throwing her newsroom under the bridge.
Just hearing now from the newsroom that that footage we just showed you a minute ago of the explosion on the bridge is old footage. So it did just come into our newsroom, but it is not this bridge collapse.
You'd think Shari would be better at apologizing, given how many times Bronwyn Bishop has issued apologies while sitting right next to her.
If I offended anyone, I'm sorry.
And if you want something longer...
On the 5th of March 2024, I appeared on Sherry Markson's programme and said that Dr. Sophie Scomps, the federal member for McKellar, is part and parcel of an anti-Semitic movement. I should not have said that. Dr. Scomps has called for funding to be restored to UNRWA by Australia to address humanitarian crisis in Gaza. This does not make her an anti-Semite. I should not have suggested that. And I apologise to her for the offence, distress and harm I caused her.
At least they haven't blamed the bridge collapse on Palestinian protesters yet, but give Sky News some time to process all the potential applicants and it'll get there. Russian to confession news now. Last weekend, four gunmen attacked a concert venue in Moscow, killing 137 people and setting the venue on fire. The US and other countries blamed ISIS, and ISIS itself took credit, even releasing footage of the attack. Russian authorities also caught all four gunmen who claimed to have been recruited by ISIS.
The Islamic State have claimed responsibility for the assault multiple times, including in a video it released that was purportedly taken during the attack.
So who does Putin think did the attack?
But Russian President Vladimir Putin continues to insist that Ukraine had a hand in it.
At least he isn't blaming diversity and inclusion policies. The most striking thing about the arrested accused is how visible signs of torture were on them.
Videos have emerged on social media suggesting some of the group were tortured while in custody. One of them brought in directly from hospital in a wheelchair.
The problem this raises is, of course, whether or not their testimony is reliable, as the Russian authorities have a long history of gaining false confessions under torture. Meanwhile, France has raised its terror alertness, and Ukraine continues to deny any involvement, while analysts are wondering what Putin's response will be and whether it'll be targeted at Ukraine or ISIS in Afghanistan, which continues to claim responsibility. However, in Sky News in Australia, the concerns are different. All of this, it seems, is a victory against the woke, according to discount racist Christopher Hitchens cosplayer Douglas Murray.
This is how the Russians operate. But again, it's one of the things that people should remember when they're forever castigating the West. You know, everyone's always, you know, all these people who go around saying, you know, war crimes about the Israelis, genocide, war crimes in America, torture, and all this sort of thing. This is a country, Russia, which actually does do that.
I'm not sure what the argument there was. The West shouldn't be held to a higher standard than Russia? Does Douglas Murray think waterboarding was what he got to do at Byron Bay on his recent trip to Australia? Why is he invalidating all the hard work put in by torturers in Abu Ghraib or Bagram or Guantanamo Bay or Israeli prisons right now, according to a recent UN report? Why is it that every conservative intellectual defense of the West and criticism of the left relies on a complete lack of basic history education? And why is Putin's connecting Ukraine to the ISIS attack, as unlikely as it is, more plausible than Sky News' attempt to connect the attack to Australia's left? can't get the funds out of my head news now. Attending a music festival is a rite of passage for Australian youth. Like a teenage boy in an African Maasai tribe cutting off his foreskin to mark his journey into adulthood, every Australian has to spend at least one weekend of their life lining up to use a portaloo that's less a toilet and more a crime scene, contracting an STD by having sex with someone who smells terrible but you're too high on nangs or whatever the fuck young people do these days to notice, and watching bands called Stapler Infusion or Back Fat and Shin Boy while standing waist deep in what you hope is mud, then convincing yourself it was a great experience because you basically spent close to $1,000 on bad beer. Now, it seems, many young Australians will no longer have the opportunity to experience this traditional coming of age.
Tickets were still available to buy on the festival's website this afternoon until organisers issued this statement. With a heavy heart, we're announcing the cancellation of Splendour in the Grass 2024. Due to unexpected events, we'll be taking the year off.
Those unexpected events, it seems, were low ticket sales, which was a surprise given the main act this year was Kylie Minogue. You know, the 55-year-old pop singer whose audience of almost entirely upper-class gay men and middle-aged women on their third Prosecco of the evening, for some reason, didn't want to spend a weekend living in a tent in the mud for a general admission price of $450. So, who is Splendour management blaming? Is it their own bad choices in the acts they booked with no appeal to young audiences? Or is it lack of preparation for bad weather? Or perhaps it's their pricing structure which makes the festival increasingly out of reach for people who do want to go? Or are they doing what Fox News did with the bridge and Putin did with the Moscow attack and putting the blame somewhere else entirely?
The Reserve Bank and federal government are being blamed for the cancellation of Splendour in the Grass.
Yup, the RBA is basically the preacher in Footloose, stopping the kids from their devil dancing. 25 events have been cancelled since 2022, endangering both the future of live music in Australia and New South Wales Police's opportunities to strip search teenagers. Immigration deportation news now. And finally, in local politics, even though the next election isn't in another year, the federal Labour government is keenly aware of its drop in popularity.
The latest news poll suggests Labour is heading towards a minority government in the next election. The party's primary vote has fallen 1 point to 32%. The coalition's primary vote has increased, meanwhile, by a point to 37. 31% say they'd vote for anyone other than the major parties, though. It's the Albanese government's worst result since November.
And so Labour is forced to do what every Australian political party has to do when needing to raise its poll numbers and increase its electability: kick out some migrants.
After hoping to rush new migration legislation through Parliament in less than 2 days, it would have forced people the government wants deported to take steps to leave or face up to 5 years in jail. It'd also allow the government to block visas from countries that don't accept its citizens Australia is trying to deport, possibly Iran, Iraq, Russia, or South Sudan.
Yes, the tried and true strategy of punishing people trying to get out of a shitty country to send a message to the governments of those countries which they can then ignore. The bill was blocked in the Senate by the Coalition and the Greens, which was a surprise to the government, which thought the Coalition would back it after forgetting how politics works. The Greens are worried the laws might be too wide-ranging, and the Coalition is upset it didn't come up with this idea itself, which is why Deputy Opposition Leader Susan Ley focused on the most important details when debating the bill.
Susan Ley launching a relentless question time attack.
Can the minister confirm that she verbally abused the secretary of her department, causing the secretary to leave her office in tears?
With their bill now held up, Labour is forced to consider other strategies to improve its popularity, which means anyone on Centrelink is really going to get fucked now. That's it for this week's edition of News Weekly. As always, I request that you head over to iTunes and leave a 5-star rating and a good review for the podcast. It really helps with the metrics and the popularity and the visibility and blah, blah, blah. Also, if you want a more serious podcast from me, I'm the host of Ear to Asia, a podcast by the University of Melbourne's Asia Institute, where I get to talk to some of the top academic experts around the world about current issues in Asian politics and culture. It's a very different show, and the latest episode is all about the rise of ethnic tensions in Malaysia. That's Ear to Asia, available wherever you get your podcasts. If you don't want to do any of those things, I'll see you right back here next week on News Weekly, where we punch the news in the headlines weekly.